flying saucers are real.
They've seen the aliens buzzing our missile silos.
The UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality.
That caused a compass needle to spin and spin.
And that's where the whole seed for the idea of underground bases at Dulce was planted.
They have very large eyes, and you know, I found their stare extremely difficult to bear.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. Michael Loke will be joining us in a moment for the news. Well, again, from now on, we will be broadcasting our shows at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is minus 5 hours UTC/GMT. And that's going to be on all1broadcast.com. That's with the number one. Shortly after that show, we will post our podcast right around 9 o'clock or so EST. I'm hoping to see some of the listeners in the chat room. It was a lot of fun last week. Michael, do you think you might make the chat room this time?
I will do my best. You know, I have kids, and Friday nights are, you know, kind of kids' night. So, but I'll try my best.
Oh, you can't. Maybe you could have someone sit in for you, a pitch hitter that could just make things up.
As a father or in the chat room?
As a father, of course. Well, anyway, after the news and before our interviews, we are going to have a chat with Peggy. She is the admin of our very, very active Facebook page, a lot to do with her. Our guest today, Peter Maxwell Slattery. He's out of Australia, has a bit of a strong accent, but a nice chap, and we have a conversation about 20 minutes with him. I was on Open Minds last Monday. I was interviewed by Alejandro Rojas, and that is on the homepage of our website. And I found out that I'm a better interviewer than an interviewee, you know, because I thought about all these things I should have said afterwards. And I really feel for a lot of the guests that I interview after this. So, Michael, what's up for the news today?
Well, this week we have some space and science news as well as UFO stories. First, though, I would like to remind everyone that all of our stories have links to full coverage on major media websites in our show notes at podcastufo.com. And while you're there, take a minute to join the forums where you can connect with other listeners, the Podcast UFO team, and special forum guests such as Mac Maloney, who will be interacting with everyone through a special guest star forum from July 20th through the 23rd. And now the news. For the first time, astronomers have been able to identify the color of an extrasolar planet. Hubble telescope scientists have determined that HD 189733b, which is about 63 light years away, is blue. However, this does not indicate that it is an Earth-like water world. Instead, it is a blue gassy giant with a temperature of about 1,000 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, I listen to a podcast every week called Star Stuff, and it's a very scientific astronomy podcast. And I was talking about this, and wow, do you know that the wind is over 4,000 miles an hour? You know, on that planet, that's what they think it is, and it's like silica, like glass, that's, you know, they think that is causing this in the atmosphere. Pretty amazing. Very extreme.
So it's like living in a auto paint sandblaster.
Basically, so, right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I still need, I mean, we've talked about this, but I still think we need to start naming planets.
I know. I mean, if I lived on that planet, I wouldn't really appreciate that name. Really.
You wouldn't want to be an HD 189733BN.
Yeah, it doesn't flow, you know?
It doesn't at all. An Italian astronaut on the International Space Station was forced to retreat back into the station after liquid started collecting in his helmet. Although Luca Parmentano first thought his drink bag was leaking, the amount kept increasing, and it soon became clear he could not complete the remaining 5 hours of the scheduled 6-hour spacewalk. Engineers estimate that between a liter and a liter and a half of fluid from the suit's cooling system actually made its way into the helmet. They are now working to determine if the failure is unique to Luca Parmentano's suit or is an indicator of a flaw in all of the spacesuits.
Well, first of all, I would wonder if that fluid would be toxic, you know, something that would be like a cooler for the suit. There's not meant to be any contact with your skin or your you know, your breathing or anything like that. Second of all, anything at all happens to me in a spacesuit when I'm up in space, and I'd be panicking anyway, never mind something happening.
Oh, yeah, I'd be adding my own liquid to the mixture at that point because, I mean, think about it. Essentially, you've got a fishbowl on your head.
Yeah.
And someone pours a 2 liter of Mountain Dew into that. Or really, probably, like you were saying, probably like a 2 liter of antifreeze.
Yeah.
You know, into your helmet. There's no way that's, I would just assume, okay, I'm going to die now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd be heading for the hatch instantly.
Exactly. Exactly. And he was out there for some time, I mean, after it started, because it kept collecting, so, until it was getting into his eyes.
Well, those Italians, you know, they built Rome.
But not in spacesuits.
No, yeah, that's true.
KRQE is reporting that the Roswell International UFO Museum and Research Center has launched a new site designed to allow people to share their encounter experiences. RoswellSightings.com also offers science news and video. Sightings are actually rated on their credibility by an advisory board based on the amount of supporting evidence supplied. We have links to the story and RoswellSightings.com in the show notes. Did you get a chance to look at that, Martin?
I did. And, you know, I think a board for sightings, you know, that's very similar to what Francis Guypin does. They try to review things and then they rate them. You know, it's very similar to that. The site looks pretty easy to use. You know, the only, I don't want to say issue I have, but thoughts I have, I should say, is people think of Roswell, they think of the crash, they think of, you know, that one incident. And I just hope that, you know, they would take it serious enough to actually use it. And I hope it grows because the functionality on the website is very good, actually.
Yeah, I wish they just would rate the strength of the case as opposed to the credibility. Because, you know, that I think is an unfortunate turn of words because if you are just telling your story and you don't have photographs and you don't have film, you know, you're going to get a lower rating, which credibility I think has a potential of being insulting or at least seeming insulting, whereas strength is a little bit, you know, more neutral.
Yeah. They need us for an advisory board. To advise their advisory board.
Special consultants.
Yes.
Wisconsin amateur UFO researcher Alan W. Smith has a new vehicle designed specifically to assist him in his work. The Ashland County Journal also has pictures of the vehicle, which boasts a telescope, GPS, and UFO research emblazoned on the side. Other researchers might want to check out his investment and get some ideas for their own vehicles. It's a fairly well thought out package, but not a huge investment if you already have a research vehicle. Did you get a chance to see that?
I did, you know, but I don't know if you've ever heard of Douglas Trumbull. He worked on, I think, a number of movies. He's done special effects and obviously done very, very well. Now, he has a Hummer. Have you ever seen that? It's called UFO Tog.
No, I haven't seen that. I'll have to look that up.
He must have, and I'm not even exaggerating. I bet he has over $1 million worth of equipment in that thing. Every type of scientific piece of equipment. For finding a UFO, the top of this Hummer opens up, two doors open up, and a telescope pops up, and he sits inside with a computer system. I've tried to get him on the podcast now for several months, and he's a very busy guy. And I actually know someone that knows him, a future guest is going to be on our show. But check out his site. It's douglastrumbull.com, I believe. And
I will, because I just bought a truck, so I'm looking for ideas.
You got a spare $1 million or so?
Well, I only spent $800 on the truck, so yeah.
Hey, yeah, you're working with some good numbers there.
And finally, the 2013 MUFON Symposium is currently underway in Las Vegas. Speakers range from Dr. Ted Peters on astrobiology to Dr. Stephen Greer on the Atacama humanoid. Martin, have you heard anything from the symposium yet?
Yeah, you know, I on their mailing list, of course, but, you know, I keep getting a few emails here and there. Am I going? You know, blah, blah, blah. I just got a question. Are you baiting me with Dr. Stephen Greer in the Atacama humanoid?
He is actually in the lineup, which is actually what I was going to ask you next. Have you looked over the lineup, and what did you think about it? I mean, there was Paula Harris, Stephen Greer, you know, Dr. Peters, a few others.
Yeah, you know, I've had a couple of people email me about the lineup. You know, I haven't really gone through it. You know, I know I'm not going to make it there. And there's supposed to be some type of major thing revealed there. Have you read anything about that? That's
I have heard whispers of that, but it's been pretty vague, and I'm hoping personally that it is the unveiling of Dr. Greer's ventriloquist act with the Atacama humanoid.
That would be great. I'm going to get the DVD to that.
I just flew in from Alpha Centauri, and boy, are my arms tired.
You know what I think I heard? I think I heard that they were going to be bringing in some other little Atacama-type baby things.
You know, supposedly there were other ones. I'm all for it. Let's see what comes of those. Although they still just remind me of old Carnival Sideshow props.
Yeah. I mean, we could call it the Atacama baby lineup. Yeah, at the MUFON. Well, hey, that's it for the news, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to take a break, and we're going to bring back Peggy. So please enjoy this music. It's by a fan of the show. He's made a lot of movie soundtracks. His name is Kerry Whitehouse. I believe his website is kerrylloydwhitehouse.com. He has an internet movie database page and all. And we'll be right back with you talking to Peggy. So we have Peggy on the line, who is the admin to our extremely busy Facebook page. Peggy, what's going on?
Not a whole lot, Martin. Just barely up. It's 8 o'clock in the morning in Las Vegas.
That's right. Peggy, I want to thank you, Peggy.
Well, you're welcome, Martin.
I believe you post like 3 or 4 postings a day. And
I do. Is that too much?
No, it's awesome. But it's funny, when you post something that someone doesn't like, they start yelling at Martin. And I like that.
I know. You do? Because I take it personally. It's like, and it's silly to take it personally because most people are just very nice. And the few that aren't, you know, why bother? But it's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you call them trolls. Some people can be a little harsh, but for the most part, they're good people on there. You're right, but it's funny.
They really are.
It's funny the type of posts you and I are always talk about the reaction of the comments and the likes and things like that, and the different types of posts. And I find that pretty interesting.
It is. You get to learn a lot about you know, your audience by going back to see what, you know, what their favorites and what's gotten the most hits.
Right.
What has gotten the most hits? Is it Martin's Having My Baby song?
You know, I don't remember that one, but I'm sure that that would have gotten the most hits.
That was
that was the one about my favorite, my nemesis, Stephen Greer. They love the UFO-related cartoons.
Yes.
And, of course, anything that is UFO-related, especially the pictures. It was a cigar-shaped UFO that I posted. It was, you know, a representation, not an actual picture, but it got a ton of hits. I think over 5,000.
Wow. Well, you do a good job because we have, you know, it's the page is growing every single day. So, and thanks to you.
Well, thank you. It's a lot of fun, and I'm happy to do it.
So, Peggy, just a little background about you. You have had an interest in, you found our show, what, about a year ago, something like that?
It was. I was trying to remember how long ago. When did you start doing this?
Almost a couple of years now.
But I thought it was not too long after.
Now, you started right out by scolding me, and I didn't, and I like that about you, because you've really, you've kept me on the right track a lot of times. And you always apologize after you yell at me, but, you know, I do appreciate it somehow.
Well, you know, I am truthful and perhaps a little blunt. I think I got that from my father. Remember Norman Thayer in on Golden Pond?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That was my father, and I become more like him the older I get.
You're Jane Fonda?
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah. Let's see you do a backflip off the dock. Remember he was trying to get her to do that in the movie? No?
Oh, honey, I've reached that point where I don't remember anything I did yesterday, let alone a movie I saw 20 years ago.
Okay, well, do you remember how you got involved in the UFO subject?
Well, I've always been interested in it. You know, I don't know if you recall, Martin, but I did write a blog for your site.
Oh, yes, I do.
And in it, I said that I'd had a close encounter at the age of 5.
Right.
So it's kind of been, you know, on my mind my entire life, which is, you know, a long time, sad to say. But I had a, you know, an encounter with an object that flew out of the woods toward me when we lived in Cincinnati and stopped 25 feet from my face.
Wow.
And, you know, when something like that happens to you, you're never the same again. You're always, always looking and always thinking about it and always trying to figure out what it was.
Yeah. Your husband kind of listens to the show now and then. And, you know, you guys seem like you talk a lot, and he supports you in all this.
He does. In fact, the whole family is crazy. So, of course, you know, we're all into the same things. It works for us. Yeah. Everyone in the family is into the study of UFOs, and everyone has seen one.
Wow.
I know.
That's pretty awesome.
It's kind of like the family that is crazy together stays together.
Okay. Michael, you have anything to throw at her?
No. I'm just kind of envious of that. My wife completely doesn't pay attention to anything I do.
I understand that, because if it were Peter, I wouldn't be paying any attention to him. But I'm a forceful character.
Well, Peggy, if you're in Vegas, is there any chance you're going to the MUFON Symposium?
No chance in hell.
Well, tell us about that.
You know, like I said, I'm a crank, and I have been to several symposiums and have found that it's just not my cup of tea. And once you've been to one and listened to some of these speakers on YouTube, you don't need to pay the money to go again, because there's nothing new. There's nothing new that they're going to be telling you. And I wouldn't walk across the street or pay a dime to see Stephen Greer.
Well, he's got something new to tell us. I think he's got a baby, Atacama baby lineup.
Well, you'd have to bleep anything I'd have to say about that. Yeah.
Oh, no, I want an Atacama humanoid action figure now.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe
life size.
I know.
They'll be in the Happy Meals at McDonald's pretty soon.
I'm sorry. You know, he started out with such promise and just to see himself destruct. But I see that happening with a lot of these people in the field. Yeah.
And what do you mean by that exactly? They get burnout, or they just realize nothing's going to change, or what?
I think that they start out with good intentions. I think Greer started out with good intentions, and I think they get this little bit of fame that's, you know, within this field. You know, they get their followers, their groupies, they're almost become like cult figures, and people just I think goes through their head. Those that make their total living off this field, they have to broaden their scope to appeal to more people. I think even if they maybe don't believe what they're saying. And talk about the field. I mean, I've always highly respected Richard Dolan, and I follow him on Facebook, and he'll change his profile picture almost daily. It's kind of odd, but the adulation and the palavering that people do over him is kind of sad. Mm-hmm. And so I think it, you know, the ones that have that kind of following, they get kind of twisted by it.
Yeah. You can see that in all aspects in life, really.
I think in this field, though, it's different because we want this stuff taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are people, too, that the further they go, the more desperate they become to solve the UFO mystery and latch on to some pet theory and just run with it, you know, because it really does seem like there are people that as they go on, all of a sudden they're, you know, you spend 30 years in the field and you figure out that, oh, well, UFOs are actually fairies, and that explains it all. Like, where the hell did that come from? But and then that's it. And I think that there are a lot of people who get into this thinking that, damn it, they're gonna knock this out. And when they don't, it's a blow to them, you know. And they don't know what to do.
Yeah, I can kind of relate to that. Don't you feel kind of like we're running out of time? I mean, I myself do because I'm a lot older than you are, Michael. But I feel like a kind of a sense of desperation, and I'm not trying to earn a living off it either.
Yeah, you know, this came up in the interview I just did with Alejandro Rojas the other day, you know, basically mm-hmm. that people are dying off that was hoping to find the answers in their lifetime, you know,
yeah.
And it's true, you know, and I don't have any expectations myself. I'm just along for the ride to see what we can find out.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think in serious quote-unquote science, you can't go in expecting that you're going to be Einstein. And even Einstein had unanswered questions at the end of it. I mean, if you're a doctor who got into, you know, cancer research, you can't let your ego get the best of you if you spent 50 years, advanced the cause, but didn't cure cancer.
Advanced the cause. But is there any advancement in this cause, Michael? I don't see where there's any advancement.
Over 50 years ago? I think there is.
I mean, there have been a lot of reports, and but we don't have really a whole lot to show for it.
Wow, I'm getting depressed.
I know. I sent you a link to a man from Harvard who states adamantly, he's an astrophysicist, I think, that there is no life in this universe other than ours. And I thought it might be kind of interesting to interview him.
Wow.
I don't know why, because it's so depressing, I can hardly stand the thought, but it would be interesting to hear someone who's that supposedly brilliant that he, you know, teaches at Harvard. I'd like to hear his reasoning.
I would too. I mean, that to me, that sounds very arrogant, really, actually.
It does. But I'd like to hear him say it.
Yes, I'll try to get him on. Well, this was a lot of fun having the three of us on. I think we should do this again. What do you think?
I think it would be great.
You got to get it back.
Let me know ahead of time so I can have my coffee.
Yeah, and you need to get a headset too. If you want to play,
I got one on.
No. If you want to play with the big boys, you got to get yourself a headset mic.
Oh, Martin.
Yeah.
Let me just say one last thing to our listeners. If for some inexplicable reason you actually would want to get in on something like the conversation we just had, join us in the chat group.
Absolutely.
You know, and come visit us in the forums. We are in the forums, and you know, Martin's always in chat, and I try to make it as often as I can. So,
and we expect Peggy might even get in there this
week. What do you mean always in chat? Are you always in some chat room someplace?
No, no, this is during the show only.
Yeah, during the show's chat. He is always going to be there. He signed a blood pact with the gods of chat to be there.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. I'll have to listen.
All right, our guest coming up today is a four-minute interview with Chip Plesher and an interview with Australian Peter Maxwell Slattery. Thanks so much, guys. We should do this again.
All right, I'll talk to you next week, Martin.
Okay, it was fun. Bye, all.
I'm with Chip Plesher. How you doing, Chip?
Good. Thank you, Mark.
We just met here at the conference, and you're an enthusiast. You also have a show. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I've been doing a show of my own called The Mind Cemetery on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It's one that Joe Montaldo produces our show and is the founder of the network, all that good stuff. And he allows us to pretty much do what we want every Monday night and have a lot of other hosts that are very opinionated, you know, to say the least, which a lot of other networks don't really have that. You know, they've got a lot of people that like to coddle the superstars, as I like to say, you know, instead of hit them in the mouth with some real questions. And, you know, I think that's a problem with Coast to Coast these days anymore, too, with George Norrie, just a host and not an interviewer. You know, he's more like a game show host these days, I think. You know, so.
Yeah, so you explore all different types of paranormal. Is UFOs one of your favorites?
Yeah, I'm more centered towards UFO and ufology. I'm more into alien contactees, abductees, whichever they want to quantify themselves as, because I know that's a big discrepancy with a lot of them, you know, whether it's willing or not, you know. And then even some of them like to say that they've been fooled into thinking that they're, you know, willing participants and everything like that. So, yeah, I do more of that. I do hit on the paranormal, but not so much because I, you know, don't. I think there's even less answers in the paranormal field than anything else. And when it comes to cryptozoology, well, we're rolling off the rails on that one sometimes. You know, when it comes to Bigfoot and Chupacabra and Mothman and things like that.
Yeah.
I also would like to do some conspiracy stuff, but I found in the course of doing the show, it's harder to get conspiracy people on for some reason. They're a little more leery about coming on to shows, I've noticed.
Yeah. Now, so when you say come on the show, so you have guests on, basically.
Yeah, every Monday night, 9 o'clock Eastern on UFO Paranormal Radio Network, my show, The Mind Cemetery. We have guests on for 2 hours. I've started doing...
2 hours?
Yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of time to fill.
Yeah, sometimes it can be, and that's... I try to keep the mantra of it being a conversation and not an interrogation when it comes to the interview style. You know, I don't have a lot of scripted questions or anything like that. You know, I just let it flow when we go where we go.
Yeah.
It's always easier like that and, you know, more natural.
Now we both just listened to Charles Halt speak. He's going to be a future guest on this podcast.
Nice.
And the reason I didn't have him on right on while I'm down here is because he didn't have enough time to do a whole show with me, but still, I'm looking forward to that. But I think that was a pretty straightforward and honest account of the situation. You hear a lot of variables. What do you think about that? It was pretty good.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of his account. I'm a big fan of Larry Warren's account and Peter Robbins' account. You know, he left at Eastgate. The book they did, I think, is great. I like Sasha Christie when she does, you know, in her stuff, but... You know, when you start mixing in binary codes and people from the future, it's, you know, again, we're running off the rails, I think. And the sad part is this is one of the reasons I wanted to come here. The sad part is that, like we were saying earlier, that the people, those guys had frightening experiences in their hypnosis video and all that kind of stuff. When you see grown men being shook like that, something definitely happened to them.
Yeah.
They've definitely had their heads screwed with post-fact and ever since then, you know, and...
You know, Charles told me the other night at the meet and greet that he actually found out that he himself was drugged.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that something?
That's crazy. Yeah, that's something he hasn't talked about a whole lot.
I don't think he's talked about it much. But the stuff he shared today about Jim Peniston and things like that, I'm actually pretty interested to have him on the show so definitely. We can get into that.
Definitely, and that's a good chance to get him on yourself so you can ask your own questions, you know, and get more in-depth. That's the best part about having a lot of these guests on and on your podcast, and I think that's our cue here.
Yeah, that's
to
it.
Get us.
Hey, well, thanks a lot.
All right, no problem. Thanks for having me on, Mark.
You bet. I'm on Skype in Australia. Well, I'm not actually in Australia. I'm Skyping Peter Slattery in Australia. How you doing, Peter?
Yeah, good, thanks.
You sound crystal clear. This is our second try. So we'll let people know it was terrible at first, but now I'm talking to you on your cell phone, which is quite amazing, actually.
Yeah. No, I put Skype on it the other day, so it came in handy.
Yeah, that's great. I understand you had a sighting back in 1995. Is that when it was?
Yeah, that was my first sighting. I was 12 years old at the time, and I was living at my father's, and it was a hot day in the summer. I don't know the exact date or anything, but I know it was early in the summer, which is when we have our school holidays that go for a few weeks. And I thought I'd go down to the service station to go and get one of them slush puppy thingos, like the Slurpees.
Oh, you have them there too?
Yeah, okay. No, and I can remember back then we had this cool cup thing that we got where the cup would change colours. But, I was going down to the servo, and the servo was a few blocks away from me dad's, and he was near the corner of Dick Road. So up the end of Dick Road was the servo, and it went onto the main highway in Australia at the time, known as the Hume Highway or the Hume Freeway. And a little bit down that road, to my right, probably just below 30 degrees or something up in the air, if you look at it on an angle, there was this huge disc. It wasn't like a normal, you know, flying disc, but it was like on the end of your weights where you put the weights on the bar.
Uh-huh.
If you put one of them on their side, it was like that. It was all curved. There was sort of no protruding bits like you get two bowls or plates and put them on, you know, connect them together. It wasn't like that. It was actually like a weight. So it was all, the top of it was straight, the bottom of it was straight, and it just had these curved edges. And it was sort of this, it was like a dull, dark grey. It didn't look shiny, but it was sort of like a darker grey. And it would have been about three times the size of a football field.
Oh, my goodness,
it was,
really?
Like, I've seen a few different types of crafts, but it wasn't like your normal thing you'd see on a movie or photos of. And, you know, I was 12 years old at the time, didn't know anything about this sort of thing except in cartoons or, you know, movies or whatever. But I noticed that, and I sort of just stood still in awe. And it slowly, that was in sort of the northeast of where I was. And it cut in front of this hill, which is known as Red Light Hill, where I've actually gone up and had, you know, seen a few other things as well. And it cut in front of the hill, so it was low enough where it cut in front of the hill and it blocked, you know, bits of the hill out behind it, and it just hovered west until out of view from where I was. So just a little bit past north going left towards the west is where I couldn't see it anymore because there was a building and a few other things on the left-hand side of me, and I just sort of stood there in awe, and, yeah, I didn't know what to think. I didn't tell anybody about that till about 2004 when I had my second sighting.
Now tell me, before you move on, how did you keep that to yourself, something that amazing?
Well, I just thought people would think I was crazy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, like I was a hypo kid, but my dad was a cop for 38 years and he was, you know, straight down the line. And I just thought, you know, there's no use. I was living with him at the time and I thought my stepbrother and sister are going to think I'm crazy. And I didn't say anything to my brother, but around that time, years later, around 2004, when I had my second sighting, and I told a couple of people about it because a friend was with me when I saw another craft. My brother came out and said that he saw a craft the same year, around the same time, but it was a different craft to what he saw. And, he's seen a few things since then, but I just, like, looking back now, I didn't think much of it at the time, but later on looking back, I was just like, that's, you know, he didn't say anything. But he was with 9 or 10 of his mates.
Wow.
And he was more closer to Red Light Hill, yeah. And they actually, after they saw me on TV last year, they actually contacted him and said, is your brother for real? And can you remember our sighting? And I was sort of, you know, a bit taken aback by that because I was just like, you know, these people are contacting him years later, like we're talking, that was in 1995, and they contacted him, you know, 2012, saying this, and I was just sort of, you know, this is weird. But, yeah, that's why I didn't really say anything. You know, being by yourself too, and, you know, being known as a bit of a hyperactive kid, you know, you just think, you know, no one's going to believe me. But later on, when a friend witnessed something with me, it was sort of like, yeah, we went back to the house. There was a couple of the boys there, my friends, and my brother was there, and we told them, and, you know, there was somebody to say what we saw.
Yeah, it's so much better. The only thing I ever saw, I was all by myself. So it's better when you have a witness. You feel a little more confident, I'm sure. So let me get this straight. Did you say that earlier that you were on a television program, and that's why people are contacting you about this?
Yeah, I was on Sunrise, which is Australia's national morning news show. There's another channel. There's a couple of channels, but I was on that.
And that's a big show in Australia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but it was weird because I was trying to get help and talk to people and get people to look at what's going on here for like 2 years. And I got responses back saying, you know, cool footage or, you know, interesting, this and that. But nobody, you know, came and investigated me or looked at what was happening until after I was on TV. And then, even then, I really couldn't care by then because, I said to people, I've been wanting help for 2 years, and just because I'm on TV now you just want to talk to me. And, you know, I was just fed up with it. But I came across some others in the field that, like Alan Ferguson, he's into it, investigating, and he's very thorough. He actually came down here from Darwin, which is thousands of kilometres away, I think about 3,000 k's away, and he come and visit me, had experiences in the house, and kept on getting in touch, and it was different from what he's seen a lot of crafts and you know, seen some things, but it was different here because it was, you know, more of the high strangeness activity, and it was weird how we come across each other. It was on Facebook, and we just hit it off straight away, and there's a few other, you know, people that are sort of known in the field that I talk to, but now, you know, all the people that want to come investigate, I just haven't got time for, because, you know, a lot of these people are the people I was asking for help from for a while, and it was frustrating because, you know, a lot of people didn't get back to me, or, you know, they said interesting footage, but, you know, when stuff keeps on happening, it wasn't just a one-time, you know, video clip. There's a lot of stuff that I've accumulated, and now it was just frustrating. But yeah, it just seemed after I was on TV, and 2 years before that I was actually on Prime News for the footage I got here, where I've got a craft that sits in the air, it's in infrared, and you can see me point at this white light and it jumps off, like it's sitting still, and all of a sudden it just jumps and just flies off horizontally. And that was shown around a bit at the time, and, you know, people said that was interesting, but nobody sort of come and talk to me. And that's when all the activity started up in 2010.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Alan is going to be on. I think I was in touch with him quite a while ago, and he just has to buy some equipment. So Alan Ferguson will be on eventually. So he's pretty well known throughout Australia, is he?
He's done a lot in Northern Territory, the top end of Australia. He's been in the paper a lot of times, and he's a really good, thorough investigator. He'll go out to sites, talk to people, look at evidence. He's really good with photographic evidence. And he's, like, up there, I think, for the last... He's not doing it now, but for, like, a year or more, he was in the paper every Wednesday, sort of his opinion on whatever they wanted to talk about. But in between those times, going back a couple of years, I think, whenever there was sightings or anything happening up there, they talked to him, and they actually did a pretty... Like, it was a pretty fair job of how they reported it. It wasn't... And up there, they look at the UFO situation or reality totally different than the rest of Australia. I don't know if it's because there's more sightings up there, but it's... like, the way I've seen it reported is just being, you know, 100 times better than down here. Like, when he came here to investigate me and we called up, because we talked a lot on the phone, every time something happened or it was getting to me, he's been a really good support base for me because... I was sort of at breaking point middle of last year, just with after, you know, the experiences got more and more. And I've got to say, out of the people that I've spoken to, he's asked me questions that nobody else has. That was good to me because it made me look at my experiences differently and sort of learn things that I wouldn't have thought or, you know, learned about otherwise if I hadn't spoke to him.
So let's move on to some of the other sightings that you've had.
Yeah, around 2004, I think I was on my way home from work and I was going to see a mate and I had a friend with me. Actually, I would have gone home first and then I went over there, but I had a friend with me and I went and saw another friend. And then me and my mate got back in my car and we drove back to my house, which is like my place at the time, which is actually a few blocks away from here, next to Prime TV, which is funny enough. And I was driving, it was Eden Street I was on, and I was driving south, and as I got to the end of the road, or just before, about maybe a block away, we saw this white light over the suburb of Glenroy, which starts at the end of that road, that suburb starts there. And I would say it was about the size of a two-story house. It wasn't like a little orb thing. And it was going, doing crazy manoeuvres, going back and forth on itself and doing these smooth circle manoeuvres, going up really high and coming back down low over the suburb of Glenroy. And we pulled over and got out and just looked at this thing. And another two or three cars pulled up as well and they got out. And we were just in awe looking at this object doing crazy manoeuvres. And it blinked out. Then after that, we went back to my place, which was about two doors down from Prime TV. We didn't even, you know, looking back now, I was like, I should have just gone to the TV station and got them out. But I just didn't think of this at the time.
Right.
It was my second sighting. And I went home and there was a few of the boys there, my mates. And, you know, like I couldn't shut up about what I'd just seen. But my mate, he looked like he couldn't talk about it, that what he saw he couldn't. I couldn't explain it either at the time. Like it was like as if he's seen something which his mind and brain had no reference for, which, you know, it didn't. But how he handled seeing that was different to me. I was hypo all night and couldn't shut up about it. And my mate, he, like when my friends asked him what, you know, what happened, it was like as if he was just shocked by the whole thing, like his persona and everything. He's like, you know, what Pete said we saw, but how he was speaking about it was just like as if he was in disbelief and stunned, and he just sat there all night, just tripped out from the whole thing, just really placid and really quiet. And, you know, I was really hypo about it. So we had two different, you know, responses to what we saw. And that's the time when I found out that my brother had the same sighting in 1995. That was the day. So it was like 9 years later that I found out about that. Around that time, I was working at at the Albury TAFE, which is the Adult Education Institute here, and I was a cleaner as well, and I started to see, I got told the place was haunted, and like by my boss, you know, he said, you know, this place is meant to be haunted, you know, and I was sort of blew it, I didn't blow it off, but I hadn't seen anything at the time, so I didn't know what to think, but, you know, sure enough, I started seeing paranormal activity there, and there was a shadow man I would see there, and there was an apparition I used to see go down a certain set of stairs, and I used to hear coughing in the toilets. And after a little while, I asked the other people working there, or one other person specifically, because it was about 3 or 4 in the morning I'd start work, and there was only me in the building the whole time, and this other bloke used to just call in. And we were standing there one time hearing coughs coming from the toilet. No one was there. It was only him and me, and we were looking at each other. And I found out later on, we're in them set of toilets, and mind you, there was a few sets, but in that specific one, I found out that somebody died from an asthma attack there, and that also somebody cracked their skull running down the stairs on the set of stairs I used to see an apparition. Which sort of blew me out because I didn't know what had happened and why the place was haunted or why people thought it was haunted. But once I found that out, I was like, well, that's where I'm witnessing activity. So around that time, I started, you know, opening up a lot more to it because, you know, second sighting and then, you know, seeing the shadow man and the paranormal activity that I did. And a few years went by and I had moved to Melbourne for the time, went to the Gold Coast, and I was a rap artist at the time, just sort of, you know, recording CDs and performing and whatnot. And, like, after a few years away, I come back to Albury, and that's when the activity got full on. And that was around October of 2010. But just before that, I actually started investigating paranormal hotspots, and you know, I got a few EVPs and went out with a mate or two and just, you know, investigated a few spots because it, you know, seeing that activity of the paranormal activity, I had a lot of questions in my mind and it intrigued me because of what I'd witnessed. And I'll take UFO reports on the side, but then all of a sudden in October, yeah, of 2010, it just started to all flare up again and flare up more than what I could have ever imagined. So
you've had a number of sightings, and I went quickly on your website. Oh, by the way, what is the address of your website?
PeterMaxwellSlattery.com.
Uh-huh. Okay. On your website, it says that you've seen orbs as well?
Yeah. It's sort of almost a weekly thing in my house now. Some of them are see-through balls. Some of them are emanating a light within. Some of them are totally just a light. Yeah, it's come with what's happened. I don't know why or how it works, but it's come with the activity. For example, I was meant to go and see, my brother was living out of town at the time, and he was coming in to stay the night at my mum's house, and I was going to visit him. And it was about 8 o'clock, I was meant to go up there or 8:30, but I never got there. And what had happened was about an hour and a half before I was meant to go up there, I thought I'd have a cigarette at the time and go out the backyard. And something told me to get the infrared camera and just point it up to the sky, leaving it on the table out the back. And I'm, you know, puffing away, and I look up and I saw this red orb just come out of nowhere fast as, and that's all I remember. Well, I come to the next day inside on the couch. I don't know what happened, wouldn't have a clue. And I played the video until it went out, and all it was you'd see the red orb come down, and then the rest of the footage was, you know, just that airy sound, the white noise sort of sound you get on a video recorded when, you know, it's just going, and everything was black. But what's weird, I didn't realise this even until after I wrote the books and looking back, the red orb was on an infrared camera and it was filmed in red. You don't get colour on an infrared camera. It's either, you know, different colours of green, or it's either black or white, depending on, you know, the infrared camera you've got.
That's right.
What's even weirder than that is that over times, like I was setting up to do a presentation in Sydney, and just before I went there when I was setting up the PowerPoint presentation, I noticed white lights behind the orb high up in the sky, blinking in and out behind the red orb high up. So for about a year or whatnot, I was just concentrated on the red orb because that's what stood out to me because I'd seen it and, you know, I got it on camera. But after replaying it and showing others, you know, there's something there high up in the sky blinking in and out, and it's a white light. So whether it's a craft and then an orb's coming out of it or what happened, you know, who knows. But that's one experience with an orb that, you know, to me is pretty more intriguing than the others. I've seen them, you know, fly around the house. I've seen them pop out of it like a white portal, and this blue orb came out of it, and it basically went around all the walls of the house in every room and then flew back out. And I was actually able to get a photo of it before it was going back out. And it's this, you can see it on my timeline page on my website. It's like a fluid light ball, and it's like a liquid blue. It wasn't like other orbs that I'd seen. It was it's totally different from anything else I'd seen. So, yeah, like there's been a lot. But in 2010, when the activity picked up again, what happened was I had a friend over. I was at the front door, and we could see this white light, my friend and I, over that suburb of Glenroy, which isn't too far from where I am now, sort of going back and forth, but going, it was like as if it was going east, but it was sort of not going fast like a plane or a helicopter. It was sort of going a bit, then sitting still, sometimes going back on itself, and then kept on going. And, you know, my mate didn't know what it was. And to me, I was like, well, that's what I've seen years earlier. in 2004. But within that two-week period, there were six sightings, and I witnessed something five times. One of the times my friend witnessed it, but he was coming over and, you know, about the party for the night or whatnot, and I was in the shower, and he's, you know, ran and knocked on the bathroom door going, it's back, Porter, because me mates call me Porter. And I've gone, tell it to pee off, and he's gone back out, and he said it's gone. So there were six sightings, but I only saw it five times, and one of those five times is the time I pointed at the craft and it shot off, which I told you about before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after that time is when it sort of kept on being a continuous thing.
Has your brother had any more sightings himself?
Yeah, he had one. I can't remember what month it was last year, but... yeah, skipping ahead of a lot of what's happened, but there's some things he won't talk about and won't talk about publicly, and it took me a while to get anything out of him.
Ah.
He just didn't want to talk, and he's 5 years older than me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it sort of paid me off a bit. I was happy but paid off at the same time when he did tell me some things, because I was like, I could have been talking to you about this all along, and you've had stuff happen, and it was happy but frustrating.
Yeah.
But he sort of just sat back on the sideline, but he's been supportive, which meant a lot.
If you really think about it, a large part of the population never sees a single craft at all. You've really had a lot of experiences. Your area is what I'd consider quite a hot spot.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. It's just lately I'm seeing a more continuous thing where people are reporting, but going back to the years beforehand, it was a lot more spread out, but... you know, something happening every now and then. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. So, Peter, thank you so much.
Yeah, all right, thank you very much. Cheers. Bye. We'll be right back.